ಮಿಳಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ. ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರೋ ಶ್ರೀಯುತಾಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರೂನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಂ ಸಹಗಣಾ ರಘುನಾಥನ್ವಿತಂ ತಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಚೈತನ್ಯದೇವಂ ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾಕೃಷ್ಣಪಾದಾನ್ ಸಹಗಣಾಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ. ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಕರುಣಾಸಿಂಧೋ ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ. ತಪ್ತಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗೀ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೆ. ವಾಂಛಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮೋ ಹರೇ ರಾಮೋ ರಾಮ ರಾಮೋ ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಆಫ್ಟರ್ ಎ ಲಾಂಗ್ ಬ್ರೇಕ್ ವಿ ಆರ್ ರೆಸ್ಯೂಮಿಂಗ್ ಅವರ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಸ್ಟಡಿ ಇನ್ ಕ್ಲಾಸಸ್. ವಿ ಆರ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಸಿಕ್ಸ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ಫಿಫ್ತ್ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ. ಸೊ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ದೇರ್ ವಾಸ್ ಎ ಲಾಂಗ್ ಗ್ಯಾಪ್, ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಸಮನ್ ಗಿವ್ ಎ ಬ್ರೀಫ್ ಓವರ್ ವ್ಯೂ ಆಫ್ ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಫೈವ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ಸ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಇನ್ ಫ್ಯೂ ಪಾಯಿಂಟ್ಸ್? ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಅಮೃತೇಶ್ ಪ್ರೂ or anyone, first chapter, what are the contents briefly, 2 minutes? Okay, what do we hear there? Uttanpad. Then Brahmaji comes. Yes, next then Prithivirat Maharaj resumes the rule. Then
but the rule
Agnidra. Okay, that's how the first chapter ends. Okay, second chapter, Devashishku. What are the contents of second chapter? In short. Purvachitti. Okay. Third chapter. Padmagnam Agrahi. What are the contents of third chapter, briefly? Okay, so that is the appearance of Radha Shukdev from Nabhi and Meru Devi. Okay, fourth chapter contents, anyone? Vinwada Prabhu, want to say? No. He would create rainfall when Indra blocks it. So such activities are described. The characteristics of an incarnation, some of those things are there in fourth chapter. Okay, then fifth chapter. Anyone else? The chapter is like full teachings only. Okay. So fifth chapter discusses about teachings of Lord Rishabhdev, which is like main part of this whole episode of Rishabhdev, which many verses of Rishabhdev's teachings are often quoted. So that is in the fifth chapter. Then now we began the sixth chapter. Here in the beginning of the sixth chapter, actually after giving teachings to his sons, Rishabhdev will become Avadhut, okay, and he tours, he goes to different places and lords beauty, even as an Avadhut, okay, a naked person just growing his hairs and then going anywhere and everywhere. So he was appearing beautiful in that condition also, right? So he was absorbed in love, transcendental love, and he did not display the Ashtasiddhis, eight mystic opulences, right? So Parikshit Maharaj gets a doubt in the first these are the contents of the chapter. Okay, first verse. Parikshit Maharaj asks a question. My dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by practice of Bhakti Yoga, and attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the powers of mystic yoga automatically arise. They do not cause distress. Why then did Rishabhdev neglect them? So this was the question of Parikshit Maharaj. So by following the process of yoga, one may attain mystic siddhis, right? But ordinary yogis will be very eager to accept those siddhis, mystic powers. But Rishabhadev did not accept them. So this was surprising to Parikshit Maharaj. On top of it, a devotee is equipoised. He is not distressed, right? Or he doesn't feel so excited also, right? He is equipoised in happiness and distress, right? He is not distressed or satisfied by material opulence. So that is the nature of a devotee. So, and on top of it, if devotee has some opulences, he will use them in devotional service, right? So Rishabhadev, being in such an exalted position, why should he neglect all these mystic powers, right? So this was the question by Parikshit Maharaj in the beginning of this chapter, right? Basically, you accept something. What is the process of bhakti? To accept things that are favorable for our devotional service and to reject things that are unfavorable for devotional service, right? But Rishabhadev is not accepting certain things, right, which can potentially be utilized in devotional service, but still even them, that also he is not accepting. Why? So Rishabhadev wants to give a lesson in this context. The lesson is mind. Don't trust the mind. Even if you are such an exalted personality also, your mind can cheat you. Better stay away from these things, mystic siddhis and all. So mystic opulences and other things, they can potentially distract a devotee, right? Although one can utilize them in Krishna service, still they have the capacity to distract a yogi, right? So as an ideal yogi, Rishabhadev is demonstrating this behavior. By neglecting those mystic siddhis, he is saying what is more important in devotional service, what is more important for a sadhaka. So that's what he is demonstrating. So 2, 3, 4, 5, these four verses very nicely describe the characteristics of mind. Right? Very beautiful verses. Right? They give us a note of caution. So second verse. So these are prose verses. Some of these we will not read. We will recite only the poetry verses. Okay, second verse. Sukadeva Goswami is replying. My dear king, you have spoken correctly. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's action. Very striking lines. Satyam uktam, what you have spoken is correct, right? But it is Vishrambham anavasthanasya means being unsteady. Vishrambham, faithful. Basically, the message that Sukadeva Goswami is giving is, with this analogy, hunter doesn't trust the captured animals. So His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, once he was giving a talk and he was narrating a small story. There was a person who got the ability to control a lion, right? So he has become very popular in that, right? He was doing so many shows, magic shows or whatever shows, and then he is just doing so many magics and gymnastic with that lion. He is making the lion play and do many other things. So his shows were becoming very popular. They were being advertised so nicely. And this person is playing, and so many people, big people, right, with their girlfriends or whatever. So they are coming and watching this show. So it was running so nicely. So one fine day, in the middle of the show, so he was doing something and everyone was watching. It's such a thorough embarrassment for this fellow. The lion came and attacked him. Okay? He was like about to die only. So attacked him and then ripped him off, like just tore him apart. He was left with life, so he has to be taken to hospital, and for many days he was with that wounds and other things. So fortunately he didn't die, but it was like that. So a person, if he captures a wild animal, right, he can't take that position for granted. That wild animal, if it is given little lenience, or little opportunity, anytime it can attack. Or if it is a normal animal also, that simple animal like deer or some rabbit or something like that, so he can just run away from this hunter. This verse is not advocating or encouraging hunting, okay? It's not saying you capture animals, okay? Whenever some fisherman example is coming, it's not that fishing is encouraged. So you just take a lesson from it, okay, and apply. So a hunter, he captures certain animals, he cannot trust those animals. The animals may even attack him, animals may run away from his captivity, right? So he has to be very vigilant. Similarly, mind also is like an animal which is captured by a hunter. Where we are doing sadhana, and sometimes it may seem that our mind is in our control. Hare, last so many days I didn't get any lusty thoughts, or I didn't get any envious thoughts. So I have become a pure devotee. So sometimes this kind of thoughts may creep in into our mind. But understand that at the least opportune moment, something may just flash in the mind. Very striking examples that Chakravarti Pad gives. Mind takes on new conditions, whether pure or impure, at every moment. Mind's disposition can change at every moment. Radhananda Maharaj also, he gives one example. One may be engaged in deity worship, right? He may be just doing aarti in front of the deities, in front of so many devotees, and all the devotees may feel that he is such a nice pujari. But while worshipping the deities also, his mind may go somewhere. Right? His mind may be thinking of something else, not in the form of Gauranitya or Radha Krishna. Right? But apparently it may seem that he is a brilliant pujari, but the fact is, you are where your consciousness is. His consciousness is not on the deities, his consciousness is somewhere else. Right? Then what is it? So basically, mind we cannot trust. That is the whole lesson. Chakravarti Pad gives few examples. Cunning man. The mind of a cunning man. So there is a cunning fellow. His mind can make him rob his friend or even kill his friend. So we can understand. Oh, that is the mind of a cunning man. Example, sadhaka. A sadhaka may do follow rules and regulations and many other things. And for some time, lust or anger may not appear in him. But suddenly one day it may appear. Suddenly he may become like a volcano, and then he would erupt, and then he becomes angry. Right? In spite of his sincere sadhana for a long time. Suddenly lust may come. Okay? Some who has practiced for several years, who has such nice sense control, the record of good control and dealings with opposite sex, he may fall victim to some lady. Right? These are all quite possible. That's what Chakravarti Pad is saying here. Okay, a low-born person, another example he gives. A person who is low-born is generally not trusted for anything. They generally have some low character. It's understood that way many times. But if he studies dharma, right, and if he shows good behavior for a long time, and he would eventually be given charge of treasury also, right, because he followed things in such a nice way that one day he became eligible to take care of treasury also. But suddenly, in spite of developing such good character, suddenly a thought may creep into his mind, I can commit theft now, because nobody is watching me, right, treasury is in my hand only, I can commit theft now, that kind of thought may creep into his mind. So that is the nature of mind. So mind, although it is undergoing purification through the medium of hearing and chanting, still, suddenly, some sinful thought can appear in mind when there is an opportunity. Right? Say, in a rural atmosphere like this, where we have no access to women, or where we don't see things so much as in a city, so it may appear to be that, okay, I have become very sense-controlled, achieved mind control. As soon as you enter Bombay, suddenly the passionate atmosphere may creep in and some thoughts may enter. So these are quite natural. That is the whole lesson in this episode. That's why a personality like Rishabh Dev is also not accepting siddhis. I may be distracted by them. He's setting an example for everyone. Okay, by not accepting these mystic powers, he is setting example for others. Right? How severe tapasya could be done. So, he is not accepting the results of tapasya, but he is accepting tapasya. So, that's the example of Rishabhdev. Yeah, these are like very nice verses, 3, 4 and 5. Nakuryat karhi jit sakhyam manasi hyanavasthite yadvishrambhachirachirnam chaskanda tapa aishwaram. So nakuryat karhi jit sakhyam. Nakuryat, don't do what? Karhichit, at any time. Sakhyam. Don't make friends with the mind. Right? Manasihi anavasthite. Anavasthite means manasi is very restless. Mind is very restless. Never make friendship with mind. Then, yet vishrambhat chirat chiranam chaskanda tapaishwaram. Even after doing such prolonged austerities and even after achieving such good mind control, even great personalities like Saubhari and Shiva also lost control over their minds. Right? Yad vishrambha chira chirnam chaskanda tapa aishwaram. Tapa aishwaram. Such great yogis like Saubhari Muni also lost control over his mind. That too in such a unassuming and such a silly way. Right? He was not seeing any demigod and apsara dancing together or doing some their romance. He was just seeing only two fish. Many times it's difficult to make out what's happening between two fishes also. Right? But interaction between, we can't even figure out which is a male fish and which is a female fish also. Right? He is doing austerities underwater and then he got distracted. So that is the nature of mind. So we can't take it for granted. Like that. We can't be overconfident. So that is the lesson. So the first business in spiritual life is controlling mind and senses. This is what Prabhupada says. Very brilliant purport. Brilliant line, beginning. So, although we are Krishna's amsha, part and parcel of Krishna, we are spiritual, but still we are struggling in this material world. Why? The reason is mind and senses. So mind is the reins that controls the senses. If the mind is not controlled, the uncontrolled mind is manifested in the senses. If the mind is controlled, senses are automatically controlled. Like that. If you see some sense object, if the mind is very loose, then the senses will just run towards the sense object. If the mind is strong, then the mind will control the senses. Like that. So who will control the mind? Intelligence. That way. So, because of this mind and senses only, the jiva is struggling. So to get out of this struggle, one has to control the mind and senses. One has to be detached. One should never neglect austerities. One should do some basic tapasya. Right? So tapasya. How much austerities we can do? I think recently somebody was asking the question to Bhakti Samrat Maharaj. Right? So whatever Prabhupada has given, we'll do. Right? Prabhupada has given us 4 regulative principles. That is austerity. Do some fasting on Ekadashi and festival days. That is austerity. So whatever is prescribed, we will do. We need not sit under water like Saubhari Muni or Prachetas and do austerities. Right? Or we can't be too loose also. 4 regulative principles, 16 rounds and Ekadashi fasting, this and that, small things that we can do. Get up early in the morning, attend Mangal Arati. So this kind of austerities are prescribed for us, we must do. So, Prabhupada says this, in his con woman association is unavoidable. But what is the hope? The hope is offenseless chanting. Prabhupada didn't say chanting. Prabhupada said offenseless chanting. That is the protection. Okay, from the association of opposite sex. Like that. So this is the reason why Rishabhdev is not accepting mystic opulences. So, he is demonstrating the power of mind. Kali Yuga people, okay, you don't be overconfident. Your mind can distract you at any time. You are already distracted. Always you are distracted. Manda, samanda, matiya, manda, bhagya, upadhrita, Upadrita means always disturbed. You are always disturbed people, right? So see, take my example and then don't trust your mind. So like that. Okay, nityam dadati kamasya chidram tam anuyeraya yoginah krita maitrasya patirjayeva pumschalim. Nityam dadati kamasya chidram tam anuyeraya. So this is another important verse where mind is compared to an unchaste woman. Nityam dadati kamasya, it always gives facility to kama, lust, right? Uncontrolled mind will always give facility to kama, etc., right? Lust and greed and other things. Yogina krita maitrasya, if the yogi does maitri, friendship with mind, if he trusts the mind, if he puts faith on the mind, he will be killed. How? Example is patyur jayeva pumschali, just like the husband of an unchaste wife. Husband is there, if he has an unchaste wife, apparently the wife may be serving the husband, you know, halwa, whatever, so many other things, but her mind is always with the paramour. Okay, and on top of it, if the wife has so many paramours, such a loose-charactered woman, if he is having his wife is like that, then all these paramours can come and kill the husband also. Right? Basically, an unchaste wife will stay with the husband but allows other men to associate with her. Okay? To be captured. Similarly, a mind may stay with a yogi but mind will allow other enemies to creep in. Lust, greed, etc. Right? That is the lesson in this verse. Yeah, here Prabhupada says this. Women should never be given freedom. They should be controlled by father, husband or son. Right? So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, you should beat the mind 100 times with shoes in the morning and with broomstick 100 times before bed. So, then only mind can come under control. Like that. Okay, next verse. Kama manyur mado lobha shoka moha bhayadaya karma bandhascha yanmola svikuryatko anutadbudha. Kama manyur mado lobha shoka moha bhayadaya. So mind is the root cause of kama, lust, manyur, anger, mada, pride, lobha, greed, shoka, lamentation, moha, illusion, bhaya, fear. These are so many enemies. So this is connected to the previous verse. Previous verse is mind is compared to unchaste woman. So unchaste woman will allow other paramours to creep in. So similarly, unchaste mind will allow all these 6 anarthas to creep in, to capture the yogi. Karma bandhasya yan moolaha. All these items, lust, anger, pride, greed, etc., they are karma bandhasya yan moolaha. They are the root cause of karma bandha, material existence. They are the root cause. Svikuryat konu tad buddha. Are which learned person? Buddha. Buddha means intelligent fellow. Okay? Intelligent man. Which intelligent man will trust the mind? Right? How does it happen? He is questioning. Okay? In his answer only he is questioning. Means it's so obvious, right? It is such an established fact that mind is uncontrolled and one should not trust the mind. That's why he is questioning. When will you question? When you are giving an answer? When the answer is such an obvious thing. Right? So here he is questioning. Like that. So, Prabhupada's small purport. The best way to control the mind is to engage it always in Krishna consciousness. Right? Mind's activity is to desire so many things. So mind's activity cannot be stopped. Okay, it will keep on, desires will keep on coming. Right? But we cannot stop the activity of the mind, but we can only give a better activity to the mind. Just like child is so restless.
Just like mind is restless, child is also restless. If the child is just given, you know, freedom, go anywhere and everywhere, he will hurt himself only. Right? So better give a better engagement. So if he is just playing with a knife, he can't just say, don't play with me, don't play with me. He cannot understand only. Take out the knife and give a small doll, okay, which is a little soft, okay. Then he can just play, he can do whatever he wants and then it will not harm him that way. So what is that doll? That is Krishna consciousness, right? Restless mind. Okay, these are the, you know, golden verses that Sukadeva Goswami gives in response to Parikshit Maharaj's question about why our Rishabhdev did not accept mystic powers, right? So, a few points from His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj. Basically, Rishabhdev came to teach pure devotional service, unalloyed, uninterrupted devotional service. So, several of his teachings in the fifth chapter also reflect that theme, right? That's what he taught to his sons and that's what he is personally doing. So, what is the definition of pure devotion service? Anya abhilashita sunyam, jnana karmadi anavartam, anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti ruttama. Whatever is favorable for devotional service, we will accept. Whatever is unfavorable for devotional service, we will reject. Here, Rishabhdev is rejecting mystic powers, mystic opulences. Why? Because they are unfavorable for pure devotional service. Pure devotee has nothing to do with those mystic opulences. Then why will he need? He is rejecting them. He is just absorbed in his thought of Krishna. Like that. So this is a very important thing. So what most people strive for through their practice of religion and spirituality are considered contaminations, distractions, diversions by Rishabhdev. All these mystic opulences, all other yogis would welcome them. They strive for them. They lament for them. They eagerly look forward to have them in possession. But they are considered distractions by Rishabhdev. I don't want them. I am absorbed in my thought of Krishna. Sufficient. Okay? If you want to follow my example, you also do that. Like that. So, if we actually want to awaken the eternal love within our hearts, we cannot have even a tinge of desire for all these things, mystic opulences, or heavenly pleasures, or impersonal liberation. They are like yogi siddhi kami. Bhagavatam reconfirms these things. What yogis are aspiring for is useless. Useless means like, it's not worth it. It's not worth to spend a human life to get mystic siddhis. It's not worth to spend a human life to merge into impersonal Brahman. It's not worth to spend such valuable human life, okay, just to get into heavenly pleasures. What is the right utility of human life? To perform devotional service. That's what Rishabhdev is saying from beginning. And that's what he is establishing also through his behavior. So the fundamental principle or the basis of achieving success in our spiritual lives, whichever path we may follow, is to control mind. These three verses, you know, 3, 4, 5, they are, you know, re-emphasizing this fact. The fundamental principle in spirituality is to controlling mind. That's the root. Okay, so it is declared in all scriptures. And how even such great personalities like Vishwamitra, Saubari and Shiva also we discussed, right? Vishwamitra, Saubari, Shiva, what are we compared to them? We are nothing, right? We are like mosquitoes compared to such great yogis, right? If they could be distracted, who are we? That's what these three verses are emphasizing, right? So, yatatohyapi kauntaya purushasya vipaschitaha indriyani pramathini haranti prasabhammanaha. Even great intelligent personalities also will get distracted, okay, by some most insignificant things also, right? So, yeah, that is important to control the mind. So, this mind can create such embarrassing situations even for great personalities like Shiva, Brahmaji, right, Vishwamitra, Saubari Muni, right? This is all Often it is explained that this kind of distractions are because of inattentiveness. Mind control. Uncontrolled mind means what? Inattentiveness. Being attentive means controlling the mind. Right? These are like very much related or analogous, you can say. So, inattentiveness, little inattentiveness will create havoc. Means, not keeping vigilance on mind will create havoc. Right? That's what is, my mind is distracted. I am just sharing points, right? Whatever I have learnt, okay, from various sources. So, I am also struggling with that. I am like a struggling sadhaka only, but these are the important points that we need to understand. So, basically, what is mind? We cannot touch it, we cannot see it, we cannot feel it, or we cannot do anything with it. We can't see it. Where is the mind? But it is there. Right? It is the main thing, okay, that decides the destinations of various living entities. Right? It is so subtle. It is subtler than space, it is subtler than air. Right? But mind is there. It is all-powerful in this whole world. Right? Although it is so subtle that we can't even see it. Right, that is very powerful. Right, it's only because of the mind that conditioned soul can is transmigrating from one body to another body, right, one place to another place. So it's all because of mind. So that is the power of mind. So a person may be a great demigod in this life, he can become an insignificant insect because of mind. A person could be a staunch brahmachari, right? He could become a family man, okay, just because of mind, right? A person could be a great, you know, rich man. He can become a beggar in 2 moments because of mind. He does some mistake, right? People will just hack him, okay? He can lose his position. So it's all because of mind, like that. So, basically, our intelligence has to be very sharp, right, in being in touch with Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We must sharpen our intelligence so that it can control the mind properly, and through the mind we control the senses. That is the hierarchy. In the chariot of body, senses are the horses, mind is the reins, and intelligence is the driver. And so, poor fellow is just sitting in the chariot and then going everywhere, wherever the intelligence is taking. If the driver is just given training from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, he can control the reins properly, right, mind properly. And through the mind, he can control the horses, senses. Then the chariot will go in right direction towards back to Godhead. Otherwise, the passenger, the soul, has to keep on changing chariots, right, keep on changing bodies, simple. Like that. So mind is to be controlled with good, proper intelligence. So intelligence is what? Intelligence has a very strong function. If you sharpen the intelligence nicely, it will control the mind. And what is mind's duty? It is constantly, every moment, it is making choices. Good or bad, good or bad. Right? Degrading or elevating, degrading or elevating. These choices mind is constantly making. But if intelligence is proper, the mind's choice is influenced by this intelligence. Right? When the intelligence is like properly guiding the mind, its choices are always elevating, not degrading. But if intelligence is so dull and stupid, then mind's choices are always degrading. And these moment-to-moment choices that we are making, right, every day, they will decide our destinations. Whether this fellow is going to become an animal or insect or a demigod or a devotee or back to Godhead, whatever, everything is depending on the moment-to-moment choices that the mind is making. So, we need to sharpen our intelligence for that. Like that. So, these are few things about the mind. So that's how our Rishabhdev, Sukadeva Goswami answers Parikshit Maharaj's question. Then he will continue with the activities of Rishabhdev. Yes, bro. Yeah. It has become little wild. Yes, Prabhu, we had some point. Even while engaging in deity worship, mind can be distracted. Right, no? Maya is just to distract you. Maya is to capture the weakest point of our mind. So somebody's mind may be distracted by seeing a beautiful sense object. That sense object could be of different natures. Right? So somebody will be very much distracted if he sees a eating item, you know, food item. Somebody will be distracted if it is like touching item. Somebody will be more distracted if he is like a hearing item. Right? Hearing. Some pop music he is attracted more. Okay, Gulab Jamun will not distract him so much. So, different kinds of distractions. Mind's duty is to capture the weakest point and then pull him. Bharat Maharaj's point is he is compassionate. So mind, Maya captured him, right, through the medium of compassion. He felt so much obliged to this poor deer that he thought, no, even at the cost of my spiritual sadhana, I must take care of this deer. So Maya's role is just to capture our weakest point. So we have to sharpen our intelligence and take shelter of Krishna, Guru and Sadhu and Shastra so much that our mind is hearing our intelligence. Right? If the intelligence is so weak, if the driver is such a, you know, patla and such a useless, you know, he has no strength at all, what he will hold the reins? He cannot hold the reins only. Right, he is supposed to just pull the reins and then control the animals, horses. Right? Maya is distracting. She is very active. She is a devotee of Krishna. She is giving the tests. Okay, she is giving tests. It's up to us whether if we equip our intelligence so much, then we will pass the test. If we don't equip our intelligence, then we will fail. Yes, Prabhu. Hmm. 24-hour advertising agency of Maya, he says. Hmm. Hmm. Okay. So now we are in the 6th verse. Okay, this is like revision. So why Rishabh Dev neglected mystic powers? So this is what we discussed. Spiritualists don't trust mind. Then restless mind, one should never make friends with it. Even great personalities like Saubari and Shiva will get distracted. And mind is like an unchaste woman. And mind is the root cause of all anarthas. So these are the points that he gave. Then, yeah. From here onwards we will move a little fast. So this is storyline. So Rishabhdev, he 6th translation, someone can read. You read the translations and we will discuss if there are any purport points. So, ego plays another important role. Ego is basically, mind is basically the servant of ego. Depends on identification. As our Kapil Dev says, mind's functions are just to serve the ego and maintain the ego. For example, if a person identifies himself strongly as a controller or a boss of a company, for example, he's a big boss of a company, that is his upadhi, that is his ego, that is his identification. Someone is causing any little slight disturbance to that ego, right, to that identification, will make him angry. Right? But if he identifies himself as a servant of Krishna, right, then he will not be affected even if someone passes comments that will attack his position as a boss or as a big industrialist or whatever. That may be a poor example, but what I am saying is, ego is like basically we are identifying ourselves with, for example in our case only, somebody may be identifying himself as a singer. I am a great singer, I am like a Gandharva, right? I should be given chance in all Maharatis and to sing Maharati in all festivals, in all leading kirtans I have to do. So he may be thinking like that, right? But if someone doesn't schedule him for some Maharati, some privileged singing opportunity, if he is not scheduled for it, he will get very upset. He will become angry. Why I am not considered? Right? So, but if he identifies himself as a servant of Krishna, right, as a servant of holy name, then he will not become upset. But who is stopping me to participate in kirtan and sing in chorus? I may not be leading the aarti, but I can sing in chorus. Who stops me? I am always having access to holy name. Right? So if he is identifying himself as a servant of holy name, then he will not become upset. But if he is identifying himself as a singer, then he will become upset. If he is not scheduled for some privileged singing opportunity. Right? So basically everything happens with the ego. We keep developing egos, identifications, upadhis. Okay, why did I say this? Here, Rishabhdev is not displaying any false ego. Right? Rishabhdev is not a madman. He is not a dumb man. He is not a deaf man. When people are just treating him like that and mistreating him so much, right, considering him deaf man and then they throwing stones or doing many other unmentionable things with him, still because he doesn't have an identification, so he would not feel offended by their behavior. Right? This example is given. Maharaj gives this example. For example, a couple, right? They just come out with nice dress. They dress them nicely. Okay, they are going for a function or party in the evening. So they just came. And evening, birds are flying back to their nests. And the bird that is flying above this couple may put a dropping, okay, on the lady or whoever, right? So dress got spoiled, right? Then one becomes so embarrassed. Hey, how can I present myself in this dress? Okay, this is so ugly, I have to go and change now. It's like they become so self-conscious, they become so embarrassed. They can't even tolerate a small black spot of dropping of a bird on their dress also. Right? What to speak of Haridas Thakur being beaten in 22 marketplaces? There is no identification there. So it's all about identification, identifying oneself as something. Right? If that lady may be identifying herself as a big, an important personality who should be presented in a proper fashion. So it creates such a great disturbance and the whole consciousness is absorbed in that one dropping spot only, that they cannot focus on anything else. Right? But here so many things are happening to Rishabhdev. If someone says some point, some passes some comment on us, we become so absorbed that we just focus on that one comment only throughout the day or maybe throughout the month. So but Rishabhdev, so much mistreatment is happening, he is just aloof. I have my own thing to do. Like that. Okay, he is teaching yogis how to give up body, right? So, yeah, we'll read the seventh verse. Seventh verse, read. So he gave up identification with his body, that's why he is wandering naked. For example, our kurta is just torn, so consciousness is totally absorbed in that one small patch only, right? It doesn't mean that we are encouraging to wander in torn kurtas or whatever. We have to cover ourselves properly, that is important. But what I am saying is the mentality, the identification. He is naked, he is wandering naked, still he is not bothered so much. He is an avadhut. We can't artificially imitate this behavior, right? What happens, that we'll hear in the next 3-4 verses. That somebody imitated this artificial behavior. They imitated the external behavior of Rishabhdev, not following his internal consciousness. Painting. Yeah, no identification. He is identifying himself as a servant only. That should be the proper identification. But what will people think if they see me in dirty dress? That identification is not there. Okay. So, he gave up his body means, out of his humility, he considered, or under Yogamaya, under the influence of Yogamaya, he considered his body to be material and he gave up the material body and set an example to other yogis how to give up material body. Right? So, yeah, he gave up the Muktalingasya means he gave up the characteristics of the Lord because he is playing the role of an ordinary human being. Like that. See, that's how madmen do. Avadhut. He is playing the role of an avadhut. He is doing it to such a perfect extent. Like that. He placed stones within his mouth and began to wonder. Yeah, they just put anything and everything. Okay, 8th verse. While he was wondering about, a wild forest fire began. This fire was caused by the friction of bamboos, which were being blown by the wind. In that fire, the entire forest near Kotakachala and the body of Lord Rishabhdev was burned to ashes. How can the Lord's spiritual body be burned to ashes? Right? When the Lord is incarnating, his body is spiritual. But it is mentioned that his body is burned to ashes. Lord is the super soul of all jivas. Right? His incarnation, Ramadi Murti Shukalan Yemena Tishtan, all his incarnations are very powerful, non-different from the Supreme Lord. So here the significance, Acharya has explained nicely, Rishabhdev's body is burnt in the forest fire. Actually what's happening there is, all the animals in the forest fire, are also burning in that forest fire. And because of Rishabhdev's presence, all those animals are getting liberated. Like that. They are being liberated from material engagement. So, forest fire burned the gross bodies of these animals and Rishabhadev's presence there, it burned the subtle bodies of those animals. So, no more material entanglement for these animals. From animal stage, they need not come to human being stage and then they have to perform some tapasya and then perfect their human life. From animal stage, they got liberated directly because of Rishabhadev. So, that is the significance of Rishabhadev's body being burnt in forest fire. Okay, next. Ninth verse. There is one king, his name is Arhat. He imitates Lord Rishabhadev. You have someone read. My dear king, the king of Konka, Venka and Kutaka, whose name was Arhat, heard the activities of Rishabhadev and imitated Rishabhadev's principles, introducing a new system of religion. Taking advantage of Kali Yuga, the age of sinful activity, King Arhat being bewildered, gave up the Vedic principles, which are free from risk, and concocted a new system of religion opposed to the Vedas. This is Jain Dharma. This was the beginning of the Jain Dharma. Many other so-called religions followed this atheistic system. So, there is this fellow Arhat. So, he imitated the activities of Rishabhadev. What was the activity? To wander naked. Externally, what is he saying? To do whatever he wants. Avadhut. Right, wandering naked, growing hairs, just eating stones or just doing other things. So that kind of behavior he adopted. But internal consciousness is absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna. So that he didn't implement. So that was the mistake. Yeah, the many people imitate the Supreme Lord. Here this is the Paundraka Vasudev, who imitated Krishna. Even in Krishna's presence, he is thinking that he is Krishna because of some foolish followers. And he would send a message to Krishna also, I am the original Vasudev, you give up your symbols. Otherwise you go come and fight with me. So he has become so foolish like that. That is Paundraka Vasudev. He is compared to Arhat. So Kali Yuga people will get benefit by hearing and chanting about Rishabhadev's activities, not by imitating him. If you have to take any inspirations from Rishabhadev's character, read 5.5 and follow what it is. What is mentioned there? 5.5. Fifth canto, fifth chapter. That is the essence of Rishabhadev. Rishabhadev's teachings. So one will get benefited by studying and, you know, following 5.5. Not by wandering naked. Right? That is what Chakravartipad says. Kali Yuga people will get benefit by hearing and chanting Rishabhadev's activities, not by imitating him. And people are incapable of looking inward, become fallen by fixed in Lord's external conduct alone. So he becomes swayed by the external behavior. For example, there, say some senior devotee is there, he is just giving nice classes, or he is singing nice kirtans, or he is doing many other managerial services or other things. So one may get captured by the external behavior, I also want to be a big singer. I also want to be a big kathakar. So he may develop such desires. That's the wrong inspiration to develop. Definitely we can take an inspiration to take share Krishna katha and to glorify Krishna. But there is an internal mood also to it. Okay? Then, the 10th verse. Kali Yuga people are just glorified from this verse. People who are lowest among men and bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord will give up the original Varnashram Dharma and its rules and regulations. They will abandon bathing 3 times daily and worshipping the Lord. Abandoning cleanliness and neglecting the Supreme Lord, they will accept nonsensical principles. Not regularly bathing or washing their mouths regularly, this is like doing achaman. They will always remain unclean and they will pluck out their hair. Following a concocted religion, they will flourish. During this age of Kali, people are more inclined to irreligious systems. Consequently, these people will naturally deride Vedic authority. The followers of Vedic authority, the Brahmanas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the devotees. This is the nature of Kali Yuga people. I'll take one. Yeah, someone read the 11th translation. Yeah, they fall into hell. They follow mental concoctions. They don't follow the Vedic authorities like Brahmanas and Supreme Lord and devotees. So these are the enumeration of the qualities of Kali Yuga people. So example is given Arhat, who followed the external behavior of Rishabhadev and could not understand the internal mood of Rishabhadev, could not understand the teachings of Rishabhadev. He introduced them Jain Dharma and some people follow that also. Okay, they just wander naked like Rishabhdev. But pluck out hair. Yeah, of course. Jain Dharma, it's mentioned. Prabhupada himself says. Okay, 12th. 12th verse. How is Lord Rishabhdev delivering them from clutches of Maya? By giving them his teachings. 5.5. So symptoms of Kali Yuga are predicted in 12th canto also. Jains refer to Rishabhdev as original preceptor, but don't follow his instructions in 5.5. So Rishabhdev is delivering people of Kali Yuga by giving his teachings in 5.5. Nayam deho deha bhajam daloke kashtan kaman arhate vidbhujangi. Don't become like stool eaters, like hogs. Right? That's what very strong teachings. Right? Mahat sevam dwaramahur vimukte parabhavastavada bodhaya. Very strong teachings. So one has to follow them. Okay? Not the external behavior. Okay, 13 onwards. Please read. This is a glorification of Rishabhdev's activities. 13. So 13th verse is saying Bharatavarsha is very pious, most pious. Why? The cause of the glory of Bharatavarsha is not for many other external reasons, but people in the world, in this land, they glorify Lord's activities. They do Shravanam, they do Krishna Katha. That is the cause of their glory. So this doing Krishna Katha is very auspicious for the welfare of humanity. Right? That's why they are glorious. Prabhupada writes this verse in the purport. Bharata bhumite manushya janmayara janma sarthakari karo paropakara. Alright? So that is the glory of Bharatavarsha. We learn more about Bharatavarsha in the 5th canto only. Prayers of residents of Jambudvipa. In that there is a section where the heavenly planet, residents of heavenly planets are glorifying people of Bharatavarsha. Alright? So that's a beautiful section. So human birth in Bharatavarsha is the best opportunity to glorify Mukunda. Because several incarnations appear in this land. Rama, Krishna, Varaha, Narasimha. So all these. And there are many pastime places. You go to Ahobilam, you will see Narasimhadeva, Gurastamba. Right? You go to different places. You go to Dwaraka, Vrindavan. So there are pastime places of Krishna. And the replicas of their pastime places are also being created. So many temples around. So this atmosphere is surcharged with memories of the Lord and His incarnations. Right? So the remembrance of the Supreme Lord is easy in this place. That place has such an ambience. So if the devotee is so advanced, he can sit near a stool pit also and then remember Krishna. Right? He can just be in the midst of, such huge cities. Right? Also, and then he can focus on Krishna. But most people are not like that. Right? So they need a proper ambience. So Bharatavarsha gives that ambience also. Okay? It can invoke remembrance of Krishna and his incarnations in everyone. That's why it is very glorious. So Nayatra Vaikuntha Katha Sudhapada, then Nasadhavo Bhagavastyadhisha, Bhagavastadashraya, sorry. Nayatra Ignesha Makha Mahotsava Suryesha Lokopi Navai Sasevyatam. This is a beautiful verse coming from the 5th canto. Nayatra Vaikuntha Katha Sudhapaga. This verse explains about a place which is worth residing in. Right? Which is a place which is worth residing at. So that is this place. Na yatra vaikunta katasubha sotabhaga. That place should always have glorification of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Right? There should always be Krishna katha. Second point. Na sadhavo bhagavata bhagavatas tadashrayaha. And that place should also have people tadashrayaha who have taken shelter of that Krishna katha. Actually, they very nicely compared also. Vaikuntha katha sudha pada. His Vaikuntha katha, Krishna katha is compared to a river. So there is a place, if that place has a river of Krishna katha, and na sadhavo bhagavata stadashreha, and there are people who have taken shelter of that river, constantly taking bath in that river, right, drinking that water, distributing that water, using that water, right? If such people are there, basically place should have Krishna katha and bhaktas and devotee association. Then third point, na yatra yagnesha makha mahotsava, there should be mahotsav. There should be always great festivals being celebrated in glorifying the pastimes of Krishna. Right? Nandotsav, Janmashtami, Radhashtami, Nityanand Trayodashi, Pushyabhishek. Right? This weekend we can do that. Gaur Purnima. So this kind of mahotsavas should happen. There should be Krishna Katha, there should be devotees, there should be festivals. If these three things are not there, that place is not fit for residence. Any sane or intelligent man should not live in that place. To what extent it is? Suresha lokopi navayana sevyatam. Even heavenly planets are nothing compared to such a place. Better to remain in the airtight bags of mother's womb than to come out and stay in such a place where he doesn't have access to these three items. That's how the demigods say. So that's how Bharatvarsha is very glorious. I don't know the number. It comes 519, 19, 5, 19, 24. Very important. Then, go ahead. 14th verse, someone read.
Ahonavamsho yashasa vadata praivartato yatra puman puna purana. Praivartato yatra puman purana kritavatara purushasya adyas चचार धर्मं यद कर्म घेतुम्.
Suddenly Sukadeva Goswami ends the glorification of Rishabhdev. Okay, or he gives a pause there in the 13th verse. 14th verse he suddenly glorifies the dynasty of Priyavrat. Rishabhdev is coming in the line of Priyavrat. Priyavrat's son is Agnidra, Agnidra's son is Rishabhdev, Nabhi's son is Rishabhdev. So it's like glory. Because the Supreme Lord appeared in this dynasty, Priyavrata's dynasty is very glorious. That's what he is saying. Right? It is pure, celebrated. Right? So similarly, Yadu dynasty, Raghu dynasty, they are all very glorious. Any verse that you remember that glorifies Yadu dynasty because Krishna appeared in the dynasty? Kunti prayer. Malayasya chandanam. Correct. Very good. Any other verse you remember? Not verse, you can just give the context also. Anything, it is, even Hastinapur ladies also glorify. What was that? Aho alam shlaghyatamam yadokulam. Aho alam dhanyatamam madhorvanam. They glorify Mathura and Yadukul because of Krishna's presence. So, like that.
Konvascha kashtam aparo nugachen. मनोरथेन अप्यभवस्य योगी योगोगमाय स्फृत स्पृहयत्युदास्त ह्यसत्यया येन कृतप्रयात्नः
facilities that come after the practice of yoga are the results that come after the practice of yoga he is rejecting. I mean the external results, the material results. He is just focused on Krishna only. So the real purpose of yoga is to achieve the favor and shelter of Lord's lotus feet, not the external opulences of anima, mahima, prapti, laghima, ishitva, all this. Right? So now yogis desire these siddhis. But siddhis are making efforts so that Rishabhdev can accept them. You are getting right? Yogis desire these siddhis. Yogis hanker for them. But the siddhis are hankering that Rishabhdev would accept them. It's the other way around. But Rishabhdev is not accepting. Pratishthanari, Sadakumari, like that. Right? So Pratishtha is always hankering that a devotee should accept me. A devotee is running away from Pratishtha. But other people are just running behind Pratishtha. Like that. Karam padam bhoshana bhoshanangam, same thing. Ornaments are beautified when Krishna wears it. Right? When we wear the earrings, it's not so beautiful. When Vrindavanvari wears same earrings, that is beautiful. So that's what it is. Next, 16th verse. Someone read. So this verse is explaining about the result of hearing and speaking about Rishabhdev. Yeah.
This narration of Lord Rishabhdev Parshad is the reservoir of all auspicious things. Whoever attentively hears or speaks of them, following in the footsteps of Acharya, will certainly attain unalloyed devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord Acharya.
Your devotional service at the lotus feet of Lord Vasudev is the result of hearing and discussing Rishabhdev's pastimes. 5.3456. Okay. Now Chakravarti nicely says, Kali Yuga people derive benefit by hearing and chanting Rishabhdev's pastimes. But other people will derive benefit after practicing that yoga system. We need not even practice what Rishabhdev did. We can just hear and chant and get benefited. That is Kali Yuga people's extra privilege. So most important point, aspect of this whole episode of Rishabhdev is his teachings in 5.5. They are very powerful. Right? Bhagavatam, if you recite or listen, it's very purifying. So Prabhupada says you should chant Hare Krishna and read Srimad Bhagavatam, that will purify you. Pibanti ye Bhagavata Atmana Satam Kathamritam Shravana Puteshu Samhritam. Punanti ye vishaya vidushitasyam. The polluted aim of life is purified by hearing Bhagavatam. Prajanti tacharana saroruhantikam. And one will attain the lotus feet of the Lord. Same thing is mentioned here. This verse is from second canto. You remember, right? Yes, Pandukne Vagra, you remember? Pibanti ye. Then next verse. Read. 17th verse. Devotees desire only devotional service, they don't even accept mukti. Mukti is not only impersonal mukti, Sayujya. So they don't even accept other four personal liberations also. Right? What was the verse? Do you remember some verse related to this? Brahmangal Thakur. Anything from Bhagavatam? Salokya, Sarishti, Samikya, Sarukyam, Ekatvam, Api Achyuta, Diyamanam na Grihananti. Vinamatsevanam. If there is no seva, even if these four kinds of personal liberations are given to him, he will not accept. So how can I accept the same form of the Supreme Lord? Oh, I have seva and then I will accept. No seva, no seva, on top of it you are giving me the form of Supreme Lord, such a great facility or privilege, how can I accept? Out of humility, a devotee rejects personal liberations also, not out of arrogance. Mukti Mukulitanjali, Bhakti Devi stand, Mukti Devi standing at the doorstep of devotee, and devotee doesn't allow her to enter. No, not out of arrogance, it's out of humility. Right? He doesn't want the facilities of liberation. He wants the privilege of service. Like that. Diyamanam nagrihananti vinamat sevanam jana. Okay. 18th verse is very important. Rajan patir guru lalam bhavatam yagunam. Daivam priyah kulapati kvachakinka rova. Astyeva nanga bhagavan bhajatam mukunda. Muktim dadati tarhi chit smana bhakti yogam. Mukti, yeah, we'll come to that. Okay. Here, why this verse is coming, important connection, transition between 17th to 18th verse. So in the last 3-4 verses, Sukadeva Goswami glorified Priyavrat's dynasty. Why is the dynasty of Priyavrat glorious? Because the Supreme Lord appeared personally. Right? So, Lord appeared in the dynasty of Priyavrat as Rishabhdev. Uttanapada dynasty as Prithu Maharaj. And Raghu dynasty as Lord Ramachandra. Yadu dynasty as Krishna. Right? But in Puru dynasty, it's so unfortunate that Lord did not appear in our dynasty. He didn't appear in Kuru dynasty. In Pandava's dynasty or Parikshit Maharaj's dynasty. So, Parikshit Maharaj may feel bad. Sukadeva Goswami is narrating to me so many pastimes in which the Supreme Lord incarnated, okay, and various forms in those dynasties. But in our dynasty, he didn't appear only. So our dynasty is not auspicious. Our dynasty is very unfortunate. So, because he's a king. So far he has been a king. So he may be feeling bad that, oh, our dynasty is not that glorious. But, Sukadeva Goswami says, Kuru dynasty is more glorious than the other four. Right? Why? Because Krishna acted as a maintainer, guru. He was very affectionate to the Pandavas and more than Yadus. So Pandavas got more association, more intimate association of Krishna than other people, than Yadus also. Right? Sarathya Parishada Sevana Sakhya Dautya Virasananu Gamana Stavana Pranaman Snigdheshu Pandushu Jagat Pranatim Cha Vishnor Bhaktim Karoti Nrupatis Charanaravinde. So, Krishna acts as Sarathi, as a chariot driver. Because Pandavas are Snigdheshu, very malleable. He acts as a messenger. He acts as a friend. He acts as a night watchman. Right? Virasana, Anugamana, Stavana, Pranaman. He follows them. He follows their instructions. He offers Dandavat to our Yudhishthira Maharaj because he is elder. So, that is the glory of Pandavas. Nobody got this privilege. They are dining with Krishna, they are eating, they are sleeping with Krishna. Especially Arjuna is so intimate. And Parikshit Maharaj is the direct grandson of Arjuna. So your dynasty is more glorious, don't feel bad. That's what Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami is saying. Right? So, a matured speaker will not only convey the message, he will take into consideration the emotions of the hearer also. What is he going through after hearing my thing? Right? Am I just dumping some information on him? Or is he actually getting it? or if he is getting it, what is his emotion? Okay, how can I pacify his emotion if that is not very favorable, right? If that is something else. So he takes into consideration all that. Sukadeva Goswami is empathizing like that. Even in the future contexts also, we have this Jadabharata and Raugana section. Jadabharata and Raugana. So, Raugana, I think Raugana just offended Jadabharata. Right? You know this incident anyways, right? You know this incident? Everyone knows this pastime? Okay, in future you will know. But basically, this Bharat Maharaj, he becomes Jadabharata in his future life, right, after his dear life. And then Raugana makes him carry this thing, palanquin. So he just, why are you just walking so slow? And then he kind of offends him and chastises him, right? Then, after realizing that Jadabharata was not a mild man, not a madman or something like that, he is very glorious personality. So Raugana comes and begs forgiveness from Jadabharata. Jadabharata was a Brahmana. And Raugana got forgiveness also. King Raugana was forgiven by Jadabharata, by a Brahmana. At that point, Sukadeva Goswami sees the emotions of Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj was feeling little bad that, oh, King Raugana is so fortunate. He got the forgiveness of Brahmana. He offended a Brahmana and he was forgiven for it. But I offended a Brahmana, but I was not forgiven for that. So he may feel like that. So to pacify Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami speaks few more things. That suspense for you. Next time we'll listen. That you hear after 3-4 days. Rajan Patir Guruvalam Bhavatam Yadunam Daivam Priyah Kulapati Kvajatinka Rova Astevananda Bhagavan Bhajatam Mukundam Muktim Bhavati Karhichit Smena Bhakti Yogam. Yeah, someone read. So here Sukadeva Goswami is emphasizing the rarity of Krishna's direct service. Mukti, Krishna will give it easily. Mukti is not a big deal. But personal service, direct service, intimate association with Krishna, that's very rare. And your dynasty got that. Right? Your dynasty is very glorious. That's what, that's how Parikshit Maharaj pacified Sukadeva Goswami pacified Parikshit Maharaj. Very beautiful verse. You can remember this. Then, last verse. Nityanubhota nijalabha nivritta trishna Sreyasya tad rachanaya chirasatta supta buddhehe Lokasya yah karunaya bhayamatma lokam Akhyan namo bhagavate rishabhaya tasmai. So his obeisances unto Lord Rishabhdev, and it's kind of brief summary of the chapter also, Rishabhdev's activities. So yeah, he is a self-realized person, and self-realized person is sufficiently satisfied, proposes. Okay, this is called Swarupa Ananda, satisfied in one's own position, constitutional position. By his personal behavior and instructions, Rishabhdev enlightened the conditioned souls and showed him to become self-sufficient in his spiritual identity. Okay, that ends the sixth chapter. So we'll take a short break of 5 minutes and begin the seventh chapter. Okay, thank you all very much.
On your anticipation, I remember this time this Kaliya concept, I think Indra Goswami doesn't manage the whole concept like that. Because Nanda is going into the coils. So he just in one verse he finishes the whole concept.
Initially.
And then he elaborates. I don't know why, but
many are like this.
Very easy. Third example.
Maybe to reveal the awareness of the Rajan Padir Guru. Very popular. Somewhere in purport, to serve and protect the ego. Who can do quotes that in Japa book also?
Now it's charging. Going inside, Shama. Okay. Seventh chapter. From seventh chapter onwards, we'll have the discussion of Bharat Maharaj. First verse. My dear King, Bharat Maharaj was a topmost devotee. Following the orders of his father, who is father?
Rishabhdev.
Who had already decided to install him on the throne, he began to rule the earth accordingly. When Bharat Maharaj ruled the entire globe, he followed the orders of his father and married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishwarup. Yeah, please read. Okay. So, this Mahabhagavat devotee, Bharat Maharaj, the first son of Rishabhdev, so he married Panchajani and then he had five sons. Okay, next. Third. Yeah, analogy is just this false ego is there. We'll get sense objects. So, similarly, Rishabhdev got, Bharat Maharaj got five sons. I don't know, no one explained this. Why it is compared to that? No, he is not speaking about his false ego. Yeah. Rishabhdev and Nabhi ruled the kingdom very nicely. So following in their footsteps, Bharat Maharaj is also ruling the kingdom nicely. Okay. So government's duty is to take care that the Varnashram is being followed in the kingdom. So that if he establishes and maintains Varnashram nicely, then he is considered to be a very good king. So no one should remain unemployed or unoccupied. So that's another important responsibility of king. Yes, Prabhu, go ahead.
With great faith, King Bharat performed various kinds of sacrifices. He performed the sacrifices known as Kapiluttra, Roshna, Puranmas, Mas, Chaturmasya, Moshyantra, and of course the sacrifice, and so many others, wherein a kind of religion is offered. Sometimes these sacrifices were performed completely and sometimes partially. In any case, in all the sacrifices, the regulations of Chaturmasya were strictly followed. In this way, Bharat Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of God.
So this verse number 5 and 6 especially, they speak about the sacrifices of Bharat Maharaj. So he performed so many sacrifices, and as we just read now, fifth verse ends with saying, through these sacrifices, Bharat Maharaj is worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, in the sacrifices, sometimes animals are sacrificed. Right? So, that is basically to test the proper execution of the sacrifice and These old animals also will get youthful bodies, right, in sacrifices. So that is often done. But in the modern age of Kali Yuga, Brahmanas will not have so much power. So this kind of sacrifices are prohibited. Asvamedam gavalambam sanyasam palavaitrikam devarena sutotpattim kalau pancha vivarjayet. These five are prohibited. Asvamedha we should not do. Horse sacrifice and cow sacrifice one should not do. And sannyas is also prohibited. Sannyas means the Mayavad sannyas, as Prabhupada explains. Right? And the offering of oblations of flesh to the forefathers, that is also prohibited. And begetting children from brother's wife is also prohibited. So these are the prohibited things in Kali Yuga. And the best sacrifice to be done in Kali Yuga is Sankirtan Yajna. Okay, next verse. Please read.
After performing the preliminaries of various sacrifices, Maharaj Bharat offered the result in the name of religion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, he performed all the yajnas for the satisfaction of Lord Vasudev, Krishna. Maharaj Bharat thought that since the demigods are different parts of Vasudev's body, he controlled those who are explained in the Vedic mantras. By thinking in this way,
okay, long verse that needs a lot of explanation. So fifth verse is explaining how Bharat Maharaj performed so many sacrifices, right? Now, why should one perform any such ritualistic sacrifices? So here, Chakravartipad, I think he quotes 11th canto, Uddhava Gita. So Krishna says in Uddhava Gita, Tavat karmani kurvita na niravadyata yavata mat katha sravanadavva shraddha yavan na jayati. Who should perform this kind of Vedic rituals and other things? Mat katha sravanadavva shraddha yavan na jayate. If one does not develop faith in hearing and chanting of my activities, and if he is not detached from material sense gratification, right, tavat karmani kurvita na niravadyate avata. So such people, sacrifices and Vedic rituals are meant for such people. But one who has developed detachment from material sense gratification, and one who has developed faith for hearing and chanting, he need not do all these sacrifices. Right? But where the first verse of this chapter mentions that Bharat Maharaj is a great Mahabhagavad devotee, pure devotee. Right? So being a devotee of the Lord, why should he take interest in karmakandic ritualistic activities? Okay? These sacrifices, which are actually meant for karmis, not for devotees. That is the question. So sixth verse answers that question. Right? So question is clear, na? So why Bharat Maharaj had to perform sacrifices which are meant for karmis? So very systematic answer given by Chakravarti Bad and Prabhupada. I am just presenting a combination. And Sukadeva Goswami also, of course. So how can a devotee, Bharat Maharaj, perform sacrifices meant for karmis? Right? The answer is, all yajnas are for satisfaction of Vasudeva, Krishna. So Bharat Maharaj was performing sacrifices for the satisfaction of Vasudeva. He had no other expectation except the pleasure of Krishna. I am doing this for the pleasure of Krishna, for the satisfaction of Krishna. Okay? I don't desire any results. That is his mood. Right? Then, he is freed from all material contamination, no attachment, no lust, no greed while performing these sacrifices. He is not expecting anything. And in sacrifices there are so many demigods. Right? And he is not aspiring for any benedictions from any demigod also. Right? In his sacrifices. He is aspiring to satisfy Krishna only, nothing else. So, now, very important point, although so many demigods are involved in sacrifices, although so many oblations are done, Indraya Swaha, Agnaya Swaha, Varunaya Swaha, so many Swahas are there, when the pujari, the priest, is putting Indraya Swaha in the fire, right, he is offering oblations to a certain demigod, our person, sponsor, our Bharat Maharaj, he was sitting there and he is meditating, I am serving the limb of Supreme Personality of Godhead. All these demigods are different limbs of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Basically, I am serving the Supreme Lord only. I am worshipping the Supreme Lord only. But limb by limb. So offering oblation in the sacrifice in the name of Indra is not a worship of Indra. It is worship of the Supreme Lord's limb. Right? He is identifying the Supreme Lord Vasudev, especially, as the source of all demigods. That's why his sacrifices are like done in a very pure devotional mentality, not in any karmic mentality, because he doesn't have all this. So he's doing sacrifices is perfectly bona fide. Right? So similarly, we may see that many devotees are apparently engaged in not so spiritual activities. It may not apparently seem spiritual. Right? He may be doing yoga, he may be doing some exercises, or he may be dealing with some vendors outside. Right? You may not see the pure, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Where is Sravanam here? Where is Kirtanam here? Where is Smaranam here? You may not directly perceive that. Nine limbs of devotional service. But they are all connected to Krishna only. Right? So we need to see the intent, right, of certain activity. We cannot judge. Here Bharat Maharaj may be seemingly doing karmakandic rituals, but his consciousness is worship of the Supreme Lord. Like that. So what do we have to do with environmentalism, health retreats, or eco-awareness? Right? Mood. So the vision of this place is set like that. Right? It's the consciousness that matters, not the external activity. Right? So Maharaj says, Avanand Maharaj says, Mother Bhumi is an expansion of Krishna. Right? She is the wife of Mother Bhumi is an expansion of Radharani. She is the wife of Varahadev. Right? So we should utilize whatever gifts that Mother Earth, Mother Nature is providing us in worshipping Krishna. Then she will be happy. We should use her resources to serve the Supreme Lord. We should not exploit her resources. That is the vision of this place. Right? Apparently it may seem that many other things are happening, but internal consciousness is this. So, like that. Actually, there are so many retreats happening here. Earlier, there used to be a retreat called Santulan in the beginning of this thing. I was coordinating that. So, so many feedback forms are filled with this one important feedback saying that we had so many classes in Bombay also, but we could absorb what is being shared here, Krishna Katha, we could absorb it better in this environment, because we are away from city environment, we are away from the anxieties of city life, we are in a peaceful place, right, where some cows are there, some villagers are there, some farming is going on. In this environment has become so conducive for us to absorb Krishna Katha. The quality of hearing increased. So, like that. Anyways, Bharat Maharaj's sacrifices are done in a mood, in a devotional mood. Now, Chakravarti gives this example nicely. If you massage the feet of a person, are you not serving the person? Okay, you did so much service, somebody gets a back pain or some body pain, someone of your friends will come and then serve his leg or hand, right? So is that not serving that person? It is. Similarly, by offering oblations in the name of Indra in the sacrifice, it's like worshipping the Supreme Lord only. It all depends on the consciousness. Yes, sir. If they are arguing like that, they are devotees. but they don't argue like this. They argue that Ganesh is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Ganesh gives me so much vidya or whatever. Right? So, that answer is there in the future things also. Worshipping a demigod independently is wrong. Worshipping demigod in relation to Krishna and identifying himself as a Vaishnav is okay, bona fide. Right? We'll, after completing this purport, all these questions are answered. Yeah, that is avidhi purvakam. We can give 100 arguments, but there are some arguments in this. Let's go through this. Right? He is a Bhakti Shastri anyways. There is one question, popular question on demigod worship. Okay. Now, first point is, why Bharat Maharaj, being a devotee, is performing sacrifices meant for karmis? It's answered, right? He is not expecting any material results. And he is seeing that demigods as limbs of Krishna, all that. Now Bharat may not be the, and Bharat is also not expecting any results. He is not in an enjoyer mode. So Bharat may not be the enjoyer, but he is the performer of the sacrifice. His role is not enjoyer, his role is performer. So he, by doing an activity also, one will be, implicated by that activity. So he cannot avoid being the doer, being the performer of the sacrifice. So answer to that is, Chakvartipada and Prabhupada both say, they quote Vishnu Sahasranam. Yajna bhuk yajna grit yajna manmanna devacha. You see, Vishnu is yajna krit. He is the performer of the sacrifice. Vishnu is the yajna bhuk. He is the enjoyer of the sacrifice. Vishnu is yajna. He is the sacrifice itself. So Bharat Maharaj, don't call him the performer of the sacrifice. Vishnu is the performer of the sacrifice. Vishnu is the enjoyer. Vishnu is the sacrifice itself. Right? So Bharat, you can't hold Bharat Maharaj for being the performer. Right? On top of it, Bharat Maharaj is only the performer, not the priest. Right? If someone who is doing the sacrifice becomes the performer of the sacrifice, the priest will become the performer, not the sponsor. Priest should be first called as performer of the sacrifice, not the sponsor. Getting na? So he puts this argument. So basically, if someone raises an argument saying that Bharat is the performer of the sacrifice, the answer is he is not the performer. Vishnu is the performer. Vishnu is the enjoyer. Vishnu is the sacrifice itself. Right? Now, okay, you are saying Bharat Maharaj is performing the sacrifice through the priest. Okay, he himself is not being the doer. Now, can a pure devotee execute karma through someone else? Through priests? Someone may raise this question. Right? I am not touching the cement, but I am engaging a maestri to do the cement work. Right? But will I not get the reaction of whatever, cement work being done? Right? Someone may question like that. So, answer is, bhakti is not covered by karma if one is constantly engaged in sravanam. So, he may be doing many other things. So, as a part of our service, we may have to deal with so many people outside. Right? Pandal. You go for yatra and you have to make some pandal. You have to go to the local people who will give so many other things. How can you engage some karmis in certain work? You may question like that. Sometimes you may have to punish certain people because they did something. So I will not punish, I will engage a policeman to do that work. So basically, a pure devotee may sometimes have to engage in something ritualistic also through the medium of someone else, but he will not incur the reaction for such an activity if he is constantly engaged in Shravanam. Okay, that is clear. So bhakti remains pure. Very nice. Bhakti remains pure even though one engages in karma by employing an agent to perform sacrifice. Because bhakti is not covered by karma if one remains constantly engaged in hearing and other activities of bhakti. Right? For example, temple construction or decoration, we may sometimes allow other people to do it. But, or for example, we as brahmacharis, we may not directly interact with opposite sex. Okay, sometimes we may have to, but we try to avoid it by engaging someone else to pass a message, if the message has to be communicated. Right? So, it's sometimes unavoidable. Sometimes we may have to do that. Right? That kind of thing. Now, okay, all these arguments are answered, but another argument. How is Bharat Maharaj's pure bhakti, bhakti remains pure, if there is so much of worship of demigods going on there? Okay, we agree that he is not expecting any material benefits. We agree that he is not the enjoyer or he is not the performer. We agree that doing the sacrifice through some priests is also proper. But so many demigods are involved, right? So many demigods are being worshipped. Right? What do you say about it? So worshipping, as your answer to your question, bro. Worshipping a devata independently. He is an independent lord. Right? Worshipping a devata in that mood. He is an independent benedictor, independent personality who can offer benedictions to the worshippers. If you think like that, then that is wrong. Okay, but if you understand that this demigod is also dependent on Krishna only, then the ananya aspect of bhakti is not lost. He can still remain within the realm of pure devotional service, ananya bhakti, okay, or the shuddha bhakti, and still worship the demigods. Right? Because he is worshipping the demigods because they are connected to Krishna. Krishna's paraphernalia. Okay, Krishna's associates. Krishna's bodily limbs, as you say. But without that mood, if you just consider the demigod as a person who gives me benedictions, right, then that is condemned. Okay? So, results of karma are impermanent, results of devotional service are permanent. So now by performing all these rituals, Bharat Maharaj's Krishna consciousness is improving. By performing karmakandic rituals, right, bhakti may not improve, bhakti will not improve. But by performing all these rituals, our Bharat Maharaj is advancing more and more in devotional service. Right? So this is not karma. What he is doing is not karma. Because karma cannot give rise to bhakti. Only bhakti can give rise to bhakti. Right? Okay, this is okay. Any points of discussion? This is the only purport where so much to be discussed. Other things are storyline. Ah, Prabhu? Okay, what is it? As a king, he has to do so many sacrifices for the welfare of people. So those are there. So his mood is devotional, right? But he is executing the responsibilities of king. As a king, he has to do. Okay, then 5.7.7. Someone please read. Here, important point. Bharat Maharaj is not purified by the rituals. Bharat Maharaj's heart is purified. It's not because of the karmakandic rituals that his heart is purified. His heart is already pure. Yeah, go ahead. So, Bharat Maharaj's heart is purified not because of performing rituals. Chakravarti clarifies that he already has a pure heart. With a pure heart he is performing all these activities. So the activities are purified because they are done with pure heart. Right? So by this method he purified all actions. And he has a natural bhakti towards Krishna. And that is increasing. Okay? And that is purifying the world. And he is worshipping the Supreme Lord through the sacrifices who has these three features as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. The description of Lord is also mentioned here because he says he is worshipping the Supreme Lord who is worshipped in three features, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. But devotees worship him in his Bhagavan feature and his bodily limbs are described. That's clear? So, yeah, as we discussed in the previous purport, worshipping each devata independently will destroy the ananya aspect of bhakti. Right? But he is understanding that the devatas are the limbs of the Lord only. So his ananya aspect of bhakti is not destroyed. He is an ananya bhakta only. Like that. So we may take help from so many experts in different fields. We may not be expert in that field. Right? But that doesn't... But we should not consider that the person who is doing certain thing for Krishna is more powerful than Krishna. For example, a devotee, he has to create a website. Right? He doesn't know how to create a website. He will employ some web designer. Right? So, we can't just because he is a web designer and he created a website for us, you can't say he is better than Krishna or Krishna is dependent on him or that person is greater than a devotee. Right? So, we will take that service from them and give him proper respect and continue with our devotional service. Like that. We should be aware that the power is coming from Krishna only, of that person also. So, worshipping the demigods is also in that mood. Okay? One may offer respects to the demigod and acknowledge his service of whatever, providing rainfall or heat or light or whatever. But we should not consider them as independent lords, more powerful than Krishna or equally powerful as Krishna also. If we are saying something. Yeah. The karmakandic ritual that became pure because of the pure heart of Bharat Maharaj. The person who is doing the action is already pure, that's why the activity is also becoming pure. Right? There is a purity of activity, there is a purity of person. The purity of the person is purifying this activity. There are auspicious activities, there are inauspicious activities. Right? For example, chastising a person is an inauspicious activity, you may say, right? But if the chastisement is given for his upliftment, that is an auspicious activity for the person. Because the person who is chastising him has a pure heart, has right intention. Right? Apparently negative actions can also become auspicious if the person who is performing that action is pure, has a pure intent. Karmakandic rituals are generally considered inauspicious or impure. But that has become pure because a devotee is doing it with a mood of worshipping Supreme Lord. That's what is mentioned. So the first point is that having a pure heart, he performed activities. Then that purified his actions. Yeah. He will also become pure. They are getting ajat sukriti. It's actually a dealing with matter. We are dealing with matter. But the dealing with matter the dealing will become spiritual if it is done with a spiritual intent. Like that. Krishna also does creation, material, creation, maintenance and destruction, which is a material activity. Dealing with matter. But in spite of doing it, he will not get entangled. Because he is transcendental. He is in the Turiya stage, fourth stage. Similarly, devotees also will not get entangled in their dealings with matter if they perform devotional service. Next. Yes. No, Bharat Maharaj's retirement. So, not much is discussed about his rule, except the sacrifices part. Right. Eighth.
Destiny fixed the time for Maharaj Bharat's retirement for material office at 1,000 times 10,000 years. When that period was finished, he retired from Kanti life and divided the wealth he had received from his forefathers.
This is called the law of Daya Bhag. Right? One receives wealth from his forefathers and distributes, transfers that wealth to his descendants. Okay, this is called Daya Bhag, inheritance. Right? So, there is like Pitra Arjita, there is Swarjita. Right? Pitra Arjita means whatever is gained by, earned by the forefathers. Like that property. You see this Tatena Gambam Sasamikshamanam Bunjana Eva Atmakritam Vipakam? Ridva Gopurbhir Vidadan Namaste Sadaya Bhag. So, Hridva Gvapurbhir Vidadan Namaste. If one considers that whatever is suffering is coming on me, okay, is by the mercy of the Lord, is because of the previous activities, and I deserve more worse treatment, but Lord out of His mercy is giving a lesser punishment, and with my mind, word and actions, I offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord. If one is in this mood, Daya Bhag, Mukti becomes Daya Bhag. As if he is inherited, like an inherited property from forefathers, mukti comes to him. He will be liberated. That's what is there. Okay, this is dividing sons, wealth among sons is law of Daya Bhag. Yes. That is 8th verse. Yeah, please read 9th.
At Kulashram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, out of his transcendental affection for his devotee, become visible to his devotee, satisfying his devotee's desire.
So Hari out of affection is visible to devotee at Kulashram. Here Prabhupada comments on exchange of love between Lord and devotees. So Bharat Maharaj left his kingdom and everything. And then, actually the description comes elsewhere, that Bharat Maharaj left the kingdom as if it is stool. Okay, kingdom, his wealth and his family members, everyone, he just left. Just like we pass stool, and we don't look back and see how much did I pass, or what is the complexion, what is the texture, all that, unless we are going for a stool test or something like that. That also, we just give it to sample, we give it to that fellow only, whatever, whoever is making that. Right? We are not attached to it. But Bharat Maharaj, that kind of analogy is given. Bharat Maharaj left like that. Left his property, material prosperity like that. And then went to Kulhasram. Right? So, there he is performing austerities and worshipping the Supreme Lord. There, Lord Hari, out of affection for his devotee, he is visible to the devotee. Right? So, Prabhupada speaks about it. Lord is always existing in different transcendental forms. Ramadi Murti Sukala Nemena Tishthant. So there are different transcendental forms of the Lord. Lord is existing in that. And devotee worships one of those forms. Somebody likes Lord Ram's form. Somebody likes maybe Krishna's form. Somebody may like Vamandev's form. Somebody may like Narasimhadev's form. So he will worship his favorite form. And Lord, out of his affection, he will reciprocate with that devotee in that form. Any other reference that you remember? Yajyad Dhyad, how does it begin? Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Hrit Saroja Asse Srutekshita Patho Nanunata Pumsam Yajyad Dhyata Urugaya Vibhavayanti Tattat Tapuh Pranayase Sadanugrahaya. Whatever favorite form that the devotee is contemplating on and worshipping the Supreme Lord, Lord will reciprocate with him in that form. That is Brahma's prayer, 3.9. Devotees worship all these forms according to their liking, and Lord out of his affection presents himself as Archa Vigraha, and sometimes personally before the devotee out of reciprocation or affection. Okay. Yeah, Varnara is having vision, right? And this is on the bhava stage. The preliminary stage of love of Godhead. He is almost at love of Godhead. Right? So here it is mentioned about Pulahashram. Right? You see, at Pulahashram, Lord Hari becomes visible to the devotee. It's not directly indicating that Bharat Maharaj is having vision. Bharat Maharaj is having darshan. Right? It is at Pulahashram, there is a facility for the devotee, okay, to access the Supreme Lord. And that's what I understood. And definitely he is having some vision, and that is disturbing his sadhana. All that is mentioned later. Yes, 10th verse. In the Pulahashram, in the Gandaki river, which is best of all rivers, the Saragram Shila, the marble pebbles, purify all those places. On each and every marble pebble, up and down, circles like navels are visible. Okay, Saligram Shilas. Yes, 11th verse, someone read. Description of his devotional service is also mentioned. So the supreme occupation of a jiva, living entity, is devotional service. Prabhupada comments on this theme. So everyone is searching for peace of mind. Everyone wants some shanti, peace. Prabhupada says this is obtainable when one is freed from material desires and engaged in bhakti. So no material desires and engagement in bhakti. These two will give you peace of mind. Okay, otherwise you are always agitated. So worship of the Lord is not at all expensive. You can just offer patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam. Worship is done. Right? So, and you need not even go to Pulahashram, okay, on the bank of Gandaki river. You can perform bhakti from wherever you are. Right? That's how Prabhupada encourages everyone to do bhakti. So these are all encouraging purports of Prabhupada. You see, when our Devahuti, Mother Devahuti, she was feeling separation from Kapil Dev, when Kapil Dev went to Ganga Sagar, right? Third canto, last chapter, 33 chapter, I think. So there it's mentioned that this, our Devahuti, she's having such intense parental affection for Kapil Dev, the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada says, you don't feel bad that only she is having that privilege. Any woman can become the mother of Supreme Personality of Godhead if she has affection, love and affection. Okay. So Prabhupada says, definitely these are all lofty things, they are very high things, but no one is barred to attain that high stage. Potentially everyone is a pure devotee. Potentially everyone can reach to that stage. Here Prabhupada says you can perform devotional service. You can't go to Pulahashram, no problem. You stay wherever you want and then do. Right? So these are all, Prabhupada is very encouraging also in his purpose. Now, in the next chapter Prabhupada gives warning purpose. Right? So all flavors are there. Earlier Prabhupada gave, you know, warning purpose in the mind section. Right. Then 12th verse, please read.
That most exalted devotee, Maharaj Bharat, in this way engaged constantly in the devotional service of the
out from his eyes, so much so that he could not see anything. Thus he constantly meditated on the rich lotus feet of Lord. At that time, his heart, which was like a lake, was filled with the water of ecstatic love. When his mind was immersed in that lake, he even forgot the regular service to the Lord.
So this is the transition that's happening between Vaidhi, regulative devotional service and spontaneous devotional service, right? So here, he is a pure devotee, he is an exalted devotee, but he is forgetting his regulative, regulations, regulative devotional service, because his mood is becoming so spontaneous, right? So the natural, surge of his emotions for the Supreme Lord are overpowering him to even forget the regulative duties, ritualistic duties also, like that. So his heart is compared to a lake filled with the waters of ecstatic love, and he is immersed in that lake, right? And he forgot the regulative service. So that is the stage of Bharat Maharaj, right? And he could become a deer in the next life. So that is such a great warning for us. So when we are reading, as I mentioned often, we are no one to minimize the position or just criticize the position of Bharat Maharaj. Okay, he got attached to a deer. Okay, we can take lesson from Bharat Maharaj's example and apply in our life. That's what we are supposed to do. We are not meant to criticize any of the personalities who are doing certain mistakes. Right? In the whole Bhagavatam, we hear narrations of so many personalities, so many devotees who are doing some small mistakes. Right? They are not meant for us to criticize or offend them or just think low of them, think less of them. They remain in their exalted position. We take lessons from it and then apply in our life so that we take care of our bhakti also, our progress also. This is the glory of Bharat Maharaj. Right? Bharat Maharaj, while doing karmakandic sacrifices, he is meditating on the limbs of the Lord. While eating prasadam, we can't meditate that Krishna has tasted this. Right? While taking the darshan of the deities also, we just say, are pagadi aisa bandha, phool achcha nahi hai. So that's how we may analyze. Right? So, but here is Bharat Maharaj's consciousness. Bharat Maharaj thought ecstatic symptoms to be an obstacle. Right? What he has done? 12th verse is discussing the symptoms of perfection, ecstasy of Bharat Maharaj. So 13th verse discusses other things. 13. Bharat Maharaj appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair on his head, which was wet from bathing 3 times daily. He dressed in a deer skin. He worshipped Lord Narayan, whose body was composed of golden effulgence and who resided within the sun. Maharaj Bharat worshipped the Lord Narayana by chanting the hymns of hymns given in the Rig Veda, and he recited the following verse as the sun rose. Right? So Bharat Maharaj worshipped Narayana by Rig Veda verse. Right? What is that verse? That is mentioned in the 14th verse. Surya Narayana. That is also mentioned in the purport. Predominating deity within the sun is Hiranmaya. Lord Narayana, he is worshipped by Gayatri Mantra. He is also worshipped by other hymns of Rig Veda. Surya Narayana. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. Okay, this is the Rig Veda Mantra. Parayarajas Savitur Jata Veda Devasya Bhargo Manasedam Jajana Sureta Sada Punaravishya Cheshte Hamsam Gridhanam Dranam Ringiram Ima. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benediction upon his devotees. The Lord has created this universe from his own spiritual potency. According to his desire, the Lord entered this universe as the super soul. And by virtue of his different potencies, he is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. So this is the meaning of the Rig Veda mantra, that Bharat Maharaj chanted. Right? So ecstatic symptoms are coming to him and he is neglecting them and then doing his sadhana. That's how strict and elevated Bharat Maharaj is. Now what happened one day suddenly? That is the 8th chapter. We'll begin. Sukadeva Goswami is saying, my dear king, one day after finishing his morning duties, what are the morning duties? Evacuating, urinating and bathing. Right? Maharaj Bharat sat down on the bank of river Gandaki for a few minutes and began chanting his mantra beginning with Omkara. He was doing his sadhana. So this is some importance of this episode. We will discuss tomorrow morning. This is the breakdown of the chapter. We will go to the chapter directly. Okay. So Bharat Maharaj was chanting on the bank of river Gandaki. Second, O King, while Bharat Maharaj was sitting on the bank of that river, a doe, being very thirsty, came there to drink. You know, a small doe, female deer, she came to drink water. Then, what happened? While the doe was drinking with great satisfaction, a lion, which was very close, roared very loudly. This was frightful to every living entity, and it was heard by the doe. And she was pregnant also. Then, fourth verse. By nature, the doe was always afraid by being killed by others. And it was always looking about suspiciously. You see, they are like very restlessly moving their head. So animals, many animals are like that. Even bird, you see, you throw some grains, some crow or some sparrow will come and eat the grains. And for every grain, the sparrow will turn his head in 10 directions. There is always fear, constant fear. Who will, somebody may pick up these grains or somebody may just chase me away from here. Always in anxiety. Right? One day on the terrace I was seeing a small sparrow was coming and eating some small piece of chapati. Right? It was there, it was just poking it and then trying to eat something. A crow came, little bigger bird. So as soon as it was coming, and the sparrow just had to run away. So crow took the whole thing and flew away. Right? Okay, by nature the doe was always afraid. And being killed by others, afraid of being killed by others, and it was always looking about suspiciously. When it heard the lion's tumultuous roar, it became very agitated. Looking here and there with disturbed eyes, the doe, although it had not fully satisfied itself by drinking water, suddenly leaped across the river. So, pani bhi piye ne, theek se, just jumping because out of fear. The doe was pregnant, and when it jumped out of fear, the baby deer fell from its womb into the flowing rivers of the river, flowing waters of the river. Basically, when the pregnant lady is having certain anxiety or she becomes very anxious, there is always a chance of miscarriage. That's what has happened here. Right? It's not only miscarriage. Being separated from its flock and distressed by its miscarriage, the black doe, having crossed the river, was very much distressed. Indeed, it fell down in a cave and died immediately. So, she left the body also. So that was the context in which Maya caught Bharat Maharaj. He was advancing so fast. How will I trap her? Trap him. Right? Compassion. He's very compassionate. She presented such a heart-melting incident where a small baby deer, infant deer, right? No one to take care, right? Mother dead, okay, in such a piteous way. So then Bharat Maharaj took it. Eventually, he gave this deer more importance than his own personal spiritual life. That was his problem. Like that. The great king Bharata, while sitting on the bank of the river, saw the small deer, bereft of its mother, floating down the river. Seeing this, he felt great compassion. Like a sincere friend, he lifted the infant deer from the waves and knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashram. So he brought it to ashram. So this is the beginning of Bharat Maharaj's distraction, right, and eventual fall down. So this is the compassion. See, while you are seeing the slides, you know, take note of the blue letters, compassion, first point. These are all the mistakes that Bharat Maharaj did. So compassion is his first mistake. Misplaced compassion, correct. So we'll just read through the purport things. Prabhupada, this Bharat Maharaj episode is very important for sadhakas. So Prabhupada gave several points, I just collected from different purports and kept it. By studying Bharat Maharaj's activities, we will learn the art of becoming completely freed from material attachment. How? Because Bharat Maharaj is leaving all his, you know, opulences, just like stool. Right? We learn how to be detached. Second, activities of Bharat Maharaj should be carefully studied for one's spiritual advancement. Prabhupada mentions that. So in spiritual advancement, we will get so many obstacles. Right? One of the obstacles is misplaced compassion, just like Bharat Maharaj did, neglecting of one's own spiritual life, willful neglect. Right? For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. On top of it, see, Bharat Maharaj's behavior, we can take some lessons from his behavior. Second, we should not offend him also. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. We should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. Right? So, other day, His Grace Radhesham Prabhu was giving that talk about food for life. Right? Distributing prasadam to everyone. So, we distribute food and eventually we want to give them Krishna consciousness. Like that. We should not be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. We'll elaborate more on this in future, in the next sessions. One should not give up his interest in attaining favor of Vishnu at any cost. Here, Bharat Maharaj gave up his interest in attaining favor of Vishnu because of his affection towards a deer, insignificant deer. Right? By constant hearing and chanting, one certainly becomes purified and becomes a fit candidate for liberation. However, if one purposefully falls victim to sense gratification, he has to be punished. At least for one lifetime, like Bharat Maharaj. Purposefully falls victim. So Bharat Maharaj could have avoided this whole scene. Right? It's not that he is helpless. He always had his free will in his hand. Right? But he went overboard and then he was like sucked into that trap. Trap of compassion. Okay. Shall we do for few more minutes? Okay. Now this story. Bharat Maharaj, we are at the stage where Bharat Maharaj was showing compassion to the deer. So the seventh verse. So seventh verse purport is very instructive. Prabhupada speaks about the subtleties of this laws of nature. So laws of nature are so subtle that Bharat Maharaj, such a great king, so advanced in devotional service and almost reached the stage of love, loving service. Bhava is a preliminary stage of love of Godhead. Bhava is a preliminary stage of prema. He is on the verge of getting prema. Okay? But he was distracted and he fell down so much so that he became an animal in the next life. Right? That is how dangerous the material existence is. So he could fall down into material platform. So one Prabhupada quotes this verse, Yam hina vyatayantete purusham purushottama samadukha sukham dhiram so amrutatvaya kalpate. Amrutatva, liberation. Okay, the doors of liberation are opened for person who is equipoised in sama dukkha and sukha. Happiness and distress, he takes it in a neutral way. So Prabhupada says, spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution. Otherwise, a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down again into material existence. So walking on razor's edge, it's not, that analogy is not given in a very poetic way or, you know, just to, you know, impress people or anything like that. It's actually like that. It's actually like walking on razor's edge only. Little inattentiveness, profuse bleeding. That's what has happened here. So now compassion. Is it wrong that Bharat Maharaj, should he not do that? When you see a insignificant infant deer, right, the mother is dead, will you not feel certain compassion for that deer and then take care of it? So what Bharat Maharaj did at that point was appropriate. But what he did later, giving the deer, the welfare of the deer more importance than his spiritual sadhana, that is wrong. At that point, just picking up the deer and then whatever, doing the needful, may be okay. Right? So real compassion, mystics will understand in next purports. So we should be compassionate. What is real compassion? We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Real compassion means rising one from material platform to the spiritual platform. So one cannot give Krishna consciousness to a deer, an animal. It's impossible. Right? It's very difficult. So Bharat Maharaj was attempting, he was not even attempting that task. He's just taking care of the material welfare of the deer. So real compassion means bringing one to from material platform to spiritual platform. Prabhupada writes in the second canto, second chapter purport also, Bhagavad Gita. Drowning man, okay, dress of a drowning man is useless, right? Somebody is drowning and you are saying that his dress is drowning, and then you are taking care of his dress. That's not the right thing. You should take care of the person. So similarly, material comforts are compared to ironing the dress or taking care of the dress only. Okay, otherwise at any moment our spiritual advancement may be spoiled and we may fall down onto the material platform. So Bharat Maharaj's compassion for the deer was the beginning of his fall down into material world. Purposes. So Maya's nature is to focus on our weakest spot. So we can contemplate on where am I weak at. So nature of this world is, Maya is everywhere. Maya attacks where we are weakest. So Bharat Maharaj did not have lust, greed, anger, false ego. He didn't have all these kind of negative qualities. But he has one quality, compassion. So Maya attacked him through that quality. Right? That became his weakness. So Bharat Maharaj was conditioned to show compassion. Right? So we may have so many weaknesses, but Maya has lot of scope for attacking us, right, through any medium, wherever we are maximum weak. Basically, if you are not falling down, that means Maya is not taking us seriously. It's not worth that I invest time on this fellow, right? He's doing something, I will let him do. I will see how long he will do. But if somebody is doing so vigorously, so intensely, Maya will become alert and then she attacks more vigorously, right? So nothing is happening to me and something is happening to somebody who practiced for so many years. How is that happening? We can't say, right? Maya took him seriously. So Maya felt that it's not worth taking me seriously. That's why I'm still around. Okay? We can't just judge anyone. What's happening between a personality and the Lord, we can't judge, right? Better not to criticize anyone who is having certain difficulties. Right? That's always the best. So, and the later purports reveal, so we have to see the pastime at two levels. One, a lesson for the struggling sadhakas. Second, the relationship between the Lord and his devotees. Here Bharat Maharaj is such a dear devotee, but he is having certain distraction or something like that. So Lord gave him one punishment for one lifetime. And then he increased his vigor to perform devotional service and took him back to Godhead. So compared to the scale of eternity, one lifetime of deer is insignificant. In that way, what's happening between Bharat Maharaj and Krishna is totally transcendental. But through that, God is teaching us so many lessons. So we need to take that part, right? We cannot minimize the position of Bharat Maharaj in any way, but we have to take all the lessons that this episode is giving us. Now, Bharat Maharaj develops attachment to the deer. This we'll take tomorrow, from 8th verse onwards. Thank you very much. Vinathara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Please take questions. Questions for tomorrow's exam. Okay, explain the nature of mind by quoting third verse and fifth verse. Quote 5.6.3 and 5 and explain the nature of mind from all purports, Prabhupada's purports, Akvargal's purports and main verses. Second question. Third verse, 5.6.3 and 5. Just briefly give the flow of the contents of this chapter. From 6th verse onwards, Rishabhdev's final activities, his wandering of Avadhuta and all. Summarize the last activities of Rishabhdev. Summarize the this is like summary from 6th verse till 13th verse. 6 to 13, summarize. Then write the version translation of 5.6.18, and why did Sukadeva Goswami speak that verse? Rajan Patir Guru Lalam Bhavatam Yadunam, that verse. Why did Sukadeva Goswami speak 5.6.18 and quote that verse also? Why did Bharat Maharaj perform sacrifices that are meant for karmis? Why did Bharat Maharaj perform so many sacrifices? This is next question. So from this you explain from this purport, 5.7.6 purport. Okay, not much. Remaining we'll have tomorrow. First question 15 marks. Second question 10 marks. Third question 10 marks. Fourth question 10 marks. I'll give one more question for 5 marks. Give the salient points of 5.8.7 purport. Purport of 5.8.7, salient points. Yes. Thank you all very much. Santrashimad Bhagavatam ki. Jala Prabhupada ki. Yes.